Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, continuing our discussion about wolves, but turning our attention to the International Wolf Center next. Our guest is Grant Spickelmeyer. He's the executive director of the International Wolf Center. We'll talk with him about wolves' relationship to nature and to you and to me. And we'll also talk about other questions that you might have. Certainly, I hope you'll join in. Questions about wolves, give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Have you visited the International Wolf Center? What'd you think? I hope you'll join in. And Grant Spickelmeyer, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Larry. I'm happy to join you today.
Yeah. So what's the mission of the International Wolf Center?
Sure. We were founded by Dr. Meech and many others back in 1985 with the goal of advancing the survival of wolf populations by teaching about wolves, their relationship to wildlands, and the human role in their future. Initially, we started as just a traveling exhibit. Dr. Meech worked with the Science Museum of Minnesota to create a exhibit about wolves that really took the latest understanding, scientific understanding of wolves and what real wolves were like out in the wild and brought that kind of across the country. It started in Minnesota, but it traveled to museums all over the country. And then when it came back to Minnesota, he and a group of others felt like it needed a permanent home up in a wolf country. So they founded a center up in Ely, Minnesota, which is northeast part of Minnesota, right on the edge of the Boundary Waters canoe area. And that opened to the public in 1993.
Yeah, talk about a good place to set it up. Beautiful setting.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's
beautiful.
And I have to tell you, I'm the new executive director. I've only been executive director since January, and I have gotten to travel up to Ely quite a bit this last year, and I can tell you it is gorgeous in every season. It is truly amazing part of the country.
Yeah. Why don't you describe the center itself? What is there?
Yeah, for those who haven't visited, it's got a museum. So it's a museum exhibit called Discovering Wolves. It's actually not the original 1985 exhibit anymore. We've updated it a little bit, put a few more computer interactives and displays, but it still focuses on what is the latest understanding of wolves and wolf biology, natural history. We also have a theater, a classroom, a retail store, and the highlight, of course, is we have an ambassador pack of wolves who live there at the facility. We have five wolves currently, and we're expecting to bring in a pair of pups next spring. So we'll be expanding our pack next year. But we do programs where our educators interpret the behavior of the pack. We do enrichment for the pack in front of the public, so we'll bring out things like beaver tails or even once a week we'll bring in a full deer carcass for them to feed, and people can observe them and learn about their, kind of what real wolves are like.
Well, it's a fascinating place for sure to go and observe wolves. And I imagine you get some photographers in there as well.
Well, yeah, we have a lot of professional and amateur photographers love to get pictures of our wolves. We love it when, they share them with us. And we, just so everybody knows, if you can't visit in person, our wolves are up 24/7 on webcams through our website, www.wolf.org. And also we're the, on a webcam aggregating site called explore.org that, brings together some of the best animal webcams across the world. We're the only wolf webcam on explore.org. The thing that's kind of unique about going to the explore.org versus our own webcams is they allow you to, there's a chat function so you can kind of have conversations and take pictures of what you see on the webcam. So you can practice your amateur photography from home on explore.org and try to get good pictures of this thing.
Oh, man. Jeff emailed to ask if there's anyone in studying the effect of wolf populations on the CWD disease in Wisconsin. He heard there was a study out west of mountain lions helping control CWD by picking out the sick animals.
Yeah, chronic wasting disease, I know, is a concern for a lot of wildlife species. And I would assume there are biologists studying it. I don't know of a specific one in Wisconsin. But yeah, the you know, we're always learning about ways that disease transmits between wildlife populations and between human and wildlife. You know, it's kind of an emerging area of research. You know, we're more interconnected with animals like wolves and other wildlife than we realize. You know, we're kind of surrounded all the time, and we're passing disease to them just like they have the opportunity to sometimes pass disease to each other.
Let's talk about the wolves that do live there at the center. How did you collect them or find them?
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about the wolf education community is that we are a close community, and we work with each other. We don't have a facility large enough up in Ely to breed wolves ourselves. If we had a full litter of puppies, it could pretty quickly overwhelm our space constraints. So we partner with other organizations who do breed wolves, many times for recovery purposes. They're working on endangered species programs or for research purposes. We have a variety of different folks that we've obtained wolf pups from in the past. This year, we're hoping to work with the Wildlife Science Center, which is a facility down here near the Twin Cities in Minneapolis-St. Paul area that does breed wolves and has offered to help us get a couple of pups for next year. So that's kind of how we get our pups. We bring in about two pups every 4 years. We're not trying to kind of overwhelm our pack, but we need to bring in kind of fresh young pups to help revitalize the pack dynamics and make sure that we can kind of continue displaying and educating people about wolves into the future.
Yeah. Sue in Chippewa Falls, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to Canada a couple years ago, and we passed two wolves on the highway. My husband stopped. We were quite a ways away, and I got out the old camera to take a picture. And he said, "Where are they? Where are they?" And I said, "Well, just release your seatbelt, and you'll see," because I left the door open so I could jump back in if I needed to. But they came down within 10 feet of me. I have the most beautiful wolf shots I've ever had, and people wouldn't believe me if my husband wasn't right there to say, "Yeah, I was there." Is this unusual? I got about 24 pictures, and I'm so proud of those. And I just kept talking to it in a very calm voice. And I said, "It looks like they're hungry. You know, do we have anything we could give them?" You know, I didn't. I only had pretzels, and they weren't interested. But
well, I tell you what, Sue. I'm sure Grant will have a comment for you in a few minutes. We are going to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Grant Spickelmeyer, Executive Director of the International Wolf Center. And you'll be able to join in, too. You can do it right now. Call 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the role of wolves in today's world with the executive director of the International Wolf Center. Our guest is Grant Spickelmeyer, and he will be talking with us, of course, about the center, but also answering your questions concerning wolves. So I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Grant, as we broke for news, Sue in Chippewa Falls told us about seeing some wolves, a pair of wolves, and stopping the car and getting out of the car with her camera and got to within 10 feet of the wolves, and I think she said she took 25 pictures.
Yeah, that's it sounds like an amazing experience. You know, I was sitting there thinking about that, and I just about during the break, I Googled wolves walking on the road, and there are actually quite a few pictures out there of people who've had somewhat similar experiences. And I do know that wolves will use roads as pathways to travel. You know, especially when, say, snow is pretty high, you know, they get used to using some of the smaller roads, maybe that don't have as many cars on them, and they will do that. I guess my one recommendation to Sue is if she has that experience again, I probably wouldn't recommend getting out of the car. You know, I think she was being careful, it sounds like, but you know, I think just any time you have a wolf or any animal coming close to the road, that is an unusual behavior for wildlife, and it's possible that it could be a sick animal. So you always want to be a little cautious about getting too close to an animal that's acting a little unusual. And then I definitely, you know, she mentioned that they looked hungry, and it's possible. You know, wolves do have periods of time where they run out of food, and it's possible it's hungry, but I definitely wouldn't encourage feeding any wild animal from the road, because all that does is encourage more animals to come closer to the road and increase the amount of roadkill. So, but really neat experience, and great that she got some good pictures.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not everybody gets a chance to see wolves in the wild. I was fortunate when I was deer hunting in the Shawamigan National Forest to be in a tree and watch a wolf come across. I knew there was a pack in the area, and this wolf came across an open marsh and pretty close to where I was. And it's a wonderful experience to be able to observe an animal like that in the wild. Earlier in the morning, I had walked out at about 5 in the morning, and this is in the National Forest, so, you know, you're over a mile off any road, and mm-hmm. I heard a wolf howl. Mm-hmm. It was a very quiet morning, and it's just still dark, of course, and another answered, and even though I was on my way to a stand, I just sat down on a stump and listened to them calling back and forth to each other. It was an experience I certainly will never forget.
That's great. Yeah, I've had similar experiences in Yellowstone, and you know, just the chance to actually hear wolves communicating with each other and even get a chance to see them. That's a pretty rare thing. Not many people get that experience.
No, for sure. Well, Rick and Holman, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just have a question, and I know that your guest on the radio is from across the whole USA. And my question is I'm being inundated by wolves and foxes in Holman. Granted, I live out in the country, but we've seen wolves on so many occasions, it's scary. They've got my pets absolutely afraid to go outside. What can I do?
So did you say that was Holman?
Yeah, Holman.
Holman, yes.
Sorry, I'm looking up Holman because I don't know my Wisconsin geography well enough to know where that is, but it's kind of western Wisconsin, it sounds like, by the river.
10 miles north of La Crosse.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there could be wolves down there. That's a little far south for them. It's also potential. Have you seen coyotes there at all?
No, they're all gone.
Okay, the coyotes
come off.
Yeah, and that does happen. When wolves come into an area, the coyotes tend to hightail it out of there because they don't get along too well. But, so it's just bothering your pets. They smell them and probably hear them.
That's the way it sounds, yes.
Yeah, you have to – I mean, there's a couple of things, but the short answer is you do have to watch, your pets when wolves are living in the area. You just have to be a little more careful with them. I would assume over time they'll get used to the smells and sounds of having wolves in the area, but you do want to, keep them close to home and not let them just roam free. Because one thing that we do know, wolves, if they encounter dogs out in the wild, wolves will often kill them. So you have to, you have to keep them close and know where they are. But, hopefully over time they should just kind of get used to each other and leave each other alone.
Rick, thank you for calling. Let's turn to Joe in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Grant. I was just going to say that it sounds like when the Ely was just opened, I took a ride up there with my family to Ely. And other than the fact that it was one of the most beautiful drives up there from Chippewa Falls up around Duluth, it was so worth the ride up there just to see that, let alone... it must have been, I hear you updated it now, which I think I need to go back up there. But you had a black wolf called Mackenzie up there. That's the most, the pack up there is amazingly gorgeous. I love wolves to the nth degree here. And I was also out in Keystone, South Dakota, where I was invited out to the Wolf People's concert, the same type of situation where they do breed the puppies out there. And I would love to play to the puppies out there, but they only let girls, my daughter's the only one to be able to go into the pen with them because the male was too much. It's amazing animals, wolves are, I have to say.
Yeah. Thanks for your thoughts. I never met Mackenzie, but I've seen pictures of him. He was an impressive wolf. Right now, I think some of our most impressive wolves, we've got a pair of brothers, Axel and Grayson, that are of the Arctic wolf subspecies. So they're really brilliant white coats, and they're quite thrilling to look at. They just have we've had many, many people take photos of them because they're really vivid and beautiful looking wolves. But Mackenzie was a gorgeous one, too.
Joe, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Pete.
Good morning. I guess I've got a couple of comments. First off, I've only ever seen one wolf in my lifetime in the wild. That was up in northern Minnesota. I can't remember exactly where, but crossing a road, and I didn't realize how large and tall they are. Beautiful animal. But I also a comment on the sport killing. I heard the comments on that the wolves kill for stocking up, so to speak. But I have actually witnessed a couple of species, one a hawk, pick up a quail. I used to have a game farm, take it up in a tree and kill it and then drop it. I went and picked it up and I had it for supper. And I've also seen where coyotes have actually gone out of their way to kill a mouse during the wintertime, leave the mouse on the snow and then continue on their way. So maybe I'm interpreting that wrong, but I do think that sometimes they kill just out of instinct. I guess I wouldn't call it sport killing. Two more comments I'll make. I know I have some friends and I've got nothing against wolves. I like nature, even though I'm a hunter and whatnot, but I have friends up in Ashland who complain about the wolves when they shoot a deer. If the deer, wanders off a ways before it dies, if they don't find it, they say within 30 minutes, the wolves get it. And I know that, you know, that concerns some of the people up there or wherever there's wolves, that they're, you know, that they're competing, I guess, you know, with the deer, with the deer hunters. But then the other comment I want to make is I used to work in special ed years ago. We did a study on a wolf, or he did a study on a wolf, and tracked one that was from the Ely Center that apparently had a collar on it. And this wolf left, you know, the Ely area. And if I remember right, this is going back 20 years ago or so. This wolf traveled from Ely or from that area, went down through like southern Minnesota, crossed the Mississippi River somewheres. I want to say in the La Crosse area, continued east through Wisconsin, if I remember correctly, like over towards Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, and then turned back north, northwest, and ended up back at Ely. You know, a trip of hundreds and hundreds of miles. We surmised that he was trying to start a new pack, but that just kind of surprised me that wolf could travel that far and then find his way back home again. They're amazing animals, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Pete, yeah, go ahead, Grant.
Oh, sure. I was just going to comment on that one because I think that last behavior you described, the dispersal behavior, is something that I think is one of the most fascinating things about wolves. And it's really important to understand that, you know, when a wolf grows up in a pack and kind of reaches the point where it wants to establish its own pack, it will leave and start wandering looking for a mate. And sometimes those wanderings can be hundreds to even thousands of miles. And that is why you occasionally get sightings of wolves in places where wolf packs don't exist. So, for instance, they'll see wolves down in Iowa, or they'll see, you know, they've had wolves kind of roam into territories in Nebraska or Iowa or South Dakota where they don't normally establish. And that's just, those are lone wolves looking for mates who are unfortunately probably heading in the wrong direction. But that can happen, and it's a real fascinating part of wolf behavior.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember, I'm trying to think of how many years back, but anyway, a wolf was spotted going through Wisconsin and actually made its way out east, quite a ways out east, before it was killed by a car. A car hit it and killed it, but it had traveled many hundreds of miles, and all in probably, as you say, Grant, all in search of a mate. And that's probably what was going on there. Pete, thanks again for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Kids in Chris in Viroqua emailed that a biologist guide in Yellowstone Park said wolves in the U.S. were brought in from Canada when U.S. populations were endangered. I'm wondering your thought on that. Is that the case to your memory or knowledge?
Yeah. The reintroduction that happened in 1995 in Yellowstone National Park was carried out with the Rocky Mountain subspecies of wolf, which is the subspecies. They did take wolves from Canada and brought them down and reintroduced them into Yellowstone National Park in 95. It was a small group of wolves, and that group has now reproduced quite successfully to the point where there is a very, very healthy population of wolves in Yellowstone National Park, and it's expanded into areas of Montana and Idaho and Wyoming outside the park as well. So,
what myths about wolves do you hear the most?
Well, I think the sport killing one that the previous caller talked about is one of the ones that I hear a lot right now. It's commonly used to say, you know, because wolves will kill multiple animals in one time, and sometimes it will appear that they're, you know, walking away from all these dead animals and just leaving them there. What, of course, I think what Dr. Meech said in his comments earlier was that the science shows that in most cases, the wolves do come back to those animals and eat them, so they're not being just left to rot. So that's probably one of the bigger myths, along with kind of the ongoing myths about, you know, that they're dangerous to humans. There have been very, very, very few cases of wolves attacking humans in the United States. The wolves in general just leave humans alone. They think we're strange and smell weird and sound weird, and they don't want to have much to do with us. I guess the one other thing I'd say that is a more common myth nowadays, and it's kind of unusual because it's the opposite of what you'd think. There are increasingly, I think, some people who project what I call almost magical or mystical qualities to wolves. And I think it's because they love wolves so much, right? And they think they're beautiful and think they're amazing. But they will almost kind of make it a wolf into some kind of magical creature that can't do anything wrong, that would never kill livestock or never do anything that humans wouldn't like. And that, of course, isn't an accurate representation of a wolf either. You know, wolves are animals and they eat meat and they have to hunt and kill and do all the things that predators do. And that creates conflict. And so we have to kind of decide as humans, you know, we think wolves are valuable to our environment, but we have to learn how to live with them and make decisions on how to live with them with kind of a realistic understanding of what a wolf is. So, yeah, there's kind of myths on both sides, I would say.
Steve in Wausau, your turn now. Hi, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just a comment. I don't know, 25 years ago, I was at the Grand Theater as a movie house, and we saw a movie there called Never Cry Wolf, and it was by Disney. Disney, this is the most gorgeous scenery in Alaska. And what it was about is a researcher came out of, like, the Ivy League schools and went up there on a plane to study how the wolves made it through the winter. And he lost all his equipment. He ran into all kinds of problems, but some Indians took him under their wing and helped him out. And he went on to find out they were pretty much eating the small critters that were going under the snow and things like that. I'm not sure if that movie's still around, if you could possibly get it, or through Netflix or something, but it was the most beautiful movie as far as the wolves and the scenery and things like that. Just to kind of.
Well, Grant, have you ever seen Never Cry Wolf?
I have. I actually loved the movie. I think one of my favorites is moments as he's startled out of his tent and he sees the wolves and he runs after them and he's not wearing any clothes because he was so, you know, he has the opportunity to study them, and so he ends up running after them naked. But the interesting thing about that movie from a scientific perspective is it portrayed wolves surviving off of eating mice, and while wolves will occasionally eat mice, they really can't survive off of them. And so at least in the wolf science world, that movie is kind of seen as a little bit inaccurate.
Yeah. Dwayne in Weston, it's your turn. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. We were on a road trip one time, and my wife had Jack London Call of the Wild and an audiobook, and I never really listened to audiobooks before. And it just made the, like, six-hour drive so much. It was Call of the Wild, Jack London. It was the name, you know.
Yeah.
It was such a neat story to listen to it, and it was narrated so great. And if you never listen to it on audio, it's a great story, you know.
Dwayne, thank you for calling. What about Call of the Wild? Have you read Call of the Wild or listened to it?
Man, I read it. I read it a long time ago. I need to read it again. I think they just came out with a movie version of it not so long ago, but. Yeah, that's of course, talking about a dog and his owner. I know they had some really interesting. I think they had an encounter with wolves in that book, but it's been a long time since I've read it, so I don't remember the specifics.
Well, you've got an event coming up that as well, do you not? Webinar.
Yeah, we've got a couple of things that I thought your audience would like to know about. You know, we did. You mentioned Dr. Meech is doing his book launch through our webinar series on October 27th, and we invite everybody to join us. That one is free of charge, and you can listen to Dave talk about his new book. That's on October 27th, yep. And you can log on and register at wolf.org. But we also have, for your Wisconsin folks, we have a Wisconsin biologist talking about wolves in the central Wisconsin forest. Her name's Dr. Teresa Simpson, and she'll be doing an online webinar on November 2nd, so right before Election Day. And you can log on to that. That one does have a small cost associated with it to help offset the cost of our webinar programs, but that's available at wolf.org as well. So if you want to learn about those wolves that live in central Wisconsin, she's going to be on there to give you all the latest information.
So that's November 2nd. You're yeah. right. Well, that'll be an easy one to remember that date, just the day before the election. Well, can people go ahead?
Well, I was just going to give one other, if I could give one other opportunity for folks in Wisconsin. We just had a donor give us some funding so that we could make our Wolf Link programming, our wolf education online programming for schools, a little more affordable for schools. So we're actually offering for any school in Wisconsin that would like to have a 45-minute wolf education program, we're charging only $25 for that. Normally it's $75. And so I just wanted your listeners to know that they can contact their school and they can log on at wolf.org and find out information about how to get a 45-minute wolf education program for their classroom. And we'll do it digitally so that it can be in any online format.
Well, Grant, thank you so much. That's great news. I appreciate you talking with us. Hope we have a chance to visit again. Thank you.
All right. Hope to see you in Ely.
Grant Spiegelmeyer is the executive director of the International Wolf Center in Ely, Minnesota. Fun talking about wolves today. Tomorrow we'll talk about your car and how to get it ready for Wisconsin winter. But in the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.